your vibe, all right?
Do I?
If that's good or bad, but
maybe it's the microphone, I don't know.
No, I don't think so. Probably the same, a little bit of the same, similar accent, I guess.
My accent sometimes is a bit odd because I work with lots of people from New Zealand and South Africa, and sometimes I end up picking up bits from them and it alters the way I speak. So if you detect any of that, that's because I'm trying to sound English at the moment. So often people will say to me, are you from here or are you from there? Because I end up picking up their accent. So, yeah, that might have something to do with it as well.
Like Zelig.
Like who, sorry?
Zelig, the Woody Allen character who's a human chameleon.
Is this something I've always done? It's a natural sort of tendency of mine. You have a bit of a twang as well, don't you? You have like a Canadian edge to your accent.
If you say so, like I can't, like one can't look at one's own eyeballs. It's a bit similar with that. Like I'm unsure like what sort of accent I have, because somebody recently even pinpointed me as Yorkshire. I was really astonished because
there is definitely there is some of that, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I certainly can't hear it, and most English people have never commented on it, but this person did, and so I mean, I'm sure like the voice communicates so much more than we're conscious of.
Mm.
So that would include where we've been, so to speak, you know, our origins and all the rest of it.
Mm.
But yeah, there's quite a strong Ricky Gervais thing now, which is, I mean, of course it's subjective, but I'm always curious about voice prints, you know, like I had a friend once who sounded really very close to Michael Keaton, the actor, and he hadn't noticed it, but then when I put the recording of both voices together, it was very, very observable.
Mm.
And there are, you know, like there are people who look almost identical with no relation. I mean, who knows how many, right? Spread across the planet. I've noticed the same with voice prints, like the mm-hmm. very close matches.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all right. I used to be a Ricky Gervais fan briefly, not anymore, but so.
I've never been actually, so I take it as a compliment, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really found it funny, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, what do you want to talk about? Because obviously we can talk about anything at all. Mm-hmm. What's on my plate currently is the transgender thing, because I just blogged about it, but I don't know if that's a subject you're particularly interested in or... What were your thoughts about what we might talk about today?
Well, the child abuse aspect is really what most interests me. I see it as kind of a key to unlocking a great deal of conditioning that is not healthy or helpful. I'm not a victim myself of these kinds of organized systems of abuse, but I'm very aware of it. I'm very aware of the effect it has, and I'm very aware of the experimental aspect of it as developing mechanisms for wider cultural manipulation and control. And I'm also aware of more so of the long-term objectives and how those long-term objectives permeate out of the power of that kind of abuse, that kind of scientific, technological sort of coordination of that sort of abuse. So that's really what made me very interested in your writing, and that was the point at which I was very I admired very much your honesty and It's unusual to find someone who has so much intelligence and has so much ability who's willing to deal with these things. Usually, I mean, essentially, it's to do with a loss of ego, and it seems to me that the losing one's ego is very painful and takes a very long time. And of course, we are conditioned, and I think this is part of the same conditioning process, the conditioning of cultivating our ego, particularly the male ego, which is then used, which is then partitioned off in a way to control us. And I think in giving that up, which I detect in what you've written, through the number of experiences you've had, I think the De Ruyter thing, if that's how you pronounce his name, I'm not totally sure, John De Ruyter, that seems to have been a recent point at which you really gave something up in order to discover something more fundamental. And so I also have been through a painful process of losing ego. I wouldn't obviously say I necessarily lost all of it, but that has that was painful, but also has allowed me then to see things more realistically. And so I'm always drawn to anyone who's made that journey and who's willing to say, okay, let's find out what's on the other side. What can we do now that we've let go of that stuff? So yeah, that's where I'm coming from, really. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was a very full and succinct summation then of your interest, and it really covered most of the bases, I would say, and like very much the context for my interest in the organized child abuse and why I want that to be the context for other things. It's like kind of Russian dolls or something. So when I'm talking about transgender, I'm talking about it like everything else that I talk about socially in the context of these organized programs of abuse and the fragmentation that occurs. But that itself, as I think you're zeroing in on, is couched in an even deeper context of, yeah, what's on the other side of the constructed identity? Exactly that. So yeah, that's, yeah, you kind of summed up the whole thing. I think we can go home now. So how did you come to this? Like, what's your background experience of specifically the programs of organized abuse?
I think I understand it through my parents, and I understand it through the failure of their marriage, which happened when I was quite young, and trying to understand what happened, why did that happen, trying to understand my relationship with each of them. And also the effect that that had on my brother as well. And trying to always, I think if you as a child you experience one of your parents leaving, then you're burdened with a feeling of I need to avoid that happening again. I need to try not to have that happen again myself. I need to not perpetuate this problem. At least that's always been a drive for me. And so I've been driven by the need to understand why did that happen? What cultural programming has made that happen? And as a teenager, the sort of cultural messaging that I was receiving was, you should be all right with this. You should accept it. And I think that was the messaging that my parents were getting as well. That, oh, this is just a new way of a new way of being, a new way of having a family, or that family is no longer important. And then always my feeling was that, well, that isn't true. It's patently not true. But I'm getting all this messaging that it is so. And so that was the initial tension for me, was because obviously I'm very close with both my parents, so I haven't spoken to my father for some time, but I feel very close to him, but it feels like there are irreconcilable problems. And or a sense of betrayal. And so I've been trying to understand why has that happened? Why is he like that? So yeah, I was slightly lost what your question was initially, but that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the personal background, and how did that lead you to uncover whatever it is that you've uncovered about these directed programs of abuse, social engineering, and so on?
Well, so then going from that experience, I went to university to study physics and mathematics, which is my brother is a physicist.
Is he older, by the way?
He's older than me, yeah. Huh. And finding at university that I couldn't stick it, in a sense I was rejecting it physically. And so I dropped out. I actually got all the way to my finals, but I didn't. I went into the final exams, but I didn't write anything on the exam papers. I just sat there, and I thought, I can't do this. So then I was left with a lot of fear out of that, about what's going to happen, and so then I've spent a long time since then of really doing sort of manual jobs, carpentry, that kind of thing, but feeling unsatisfied. That the sense of the thing that I had at university, or the sense of possibility that I had prior to it, didn't happen. And I'm trying to understand, why didn't it happen? Why didn't that thing happen? Because I was so much looking forward to it. So that's then led, in a sense, me living a sort of itinerant lifestyle, and being outside really of society, being outside of any sort of employment where you need a CV, for example. I couldn't really get into that world, though I did try disastrously a few times to do that sort of thing. And then from doing that work, essentially working in live events, that kind of thing, as crew and so on, I was able to observe a lot of different people, a lot of different places, and at the same time struggling myself to try and understand my own musical interest, that I felt like, well, this is something that I was really interested in as a young person, but I couldn't ever tolerate studying of it. And so trying to understand if there was something there, something that I should be doing, which I believe that there is, though I've not really ever fully understood it. So this then led me to be more aware, I think, of that certain things were not right. And so out of that process, I think the first thing I did was I watched a YouTube video of a woman called Kathy Griggs, I think is her name. And she was the wife of a high-ranking Navy SEAL a member. And I don't know, have you watched that interview with her?
No, I don't know that.
Well, in it she talks about all of these things her husband would say to her when he was drunk. And he would say things like that there was no such thing as the cold, but at our level we were never at war with Russia. And he would talk about the involvement of the Navy SEALs with drug smuggling and so on. And would talk about that there were initiations involving abuse, sexual abuse, and also murder. So this at the time shocked me, and it made me aware of something, because she seemed very credible. It made me aware of something I couldn't really understand. And then out of that, I then was looking at, I should say, I really started looking at this stuff after I had a sort of anxiety breakdown, in a sense, where I couldn't sustain a portion of my ego anymore. And I found that the effort of it was making me physically unwell. And I think once I'd let that go, then I thought, I need to start looking at something else, or my mind became open. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Is that your mind is not, you do see evidence all the time, but you dismiss it because you're still maintaining a part of your ego. And I think once you stop doing that, then you become